Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you programs from the golden age of radio. Mark Levonier, your host for An Hour of Crime, later on the Screen Director's Playhouse from 1949, but first an episode of the Black Museum called The Sash Cord, the syndicated episode from 1952.
This is Orson Welles, speaking from London. The Black Museum, a repository of crime, of death by violence. Here in the bleak stone structure which is Scotland Yard, there is a warehouse of souvenirs, where ordinary objects, a briar root pipe, a dingy white glove, a lump of twisted sealing wax, all have a history of murder. This length of sash cord is quite commonplace. You might see something like this in any window frame.
Harmless-looking bit of rope.
It seems so. Frayed at one end, cut all cleanly at the other.
Just the right length to hook around a man's neck and twist.
Today, that bit of sash cord can be seen in the Black Museum.
From the annals of the Criminal Investigation Department of the London Police, we bring you the dramatic stories of the crimes recorded by the objects in Scotland Yard's Gallery of Death, the Black Museum.
Black Museum, Scotland Yard's Museum of Murder. Outside these walls of blackened brick and slate is London, where since daybreak the river has borne an endless burden of traffic. On fog-shrouded bridges and in narrow streets, tens of thousands of pedestrians have jostled one another, all very much alive. But here, within this room, the connoisseurs of crime may see recorded for posterity in cabinets, in wooden trays, in jars, carefully labeled and preserved, the evidence of vindictive death. This sash cord, short piece of rope, grimy, frayed at one end, not remarkable in itself, yet it came from the stage of a famous theater in the city of Brighton, where Octavia Kenmore, actress-manager, was concluding her annual engagement. The alley of that theater was like any other, a corridor of darkness between the street and the stage door. And one September evening, a man came running out of the shadows, startling the doorkeeper who sat dozing in his chair.
Mr. Carter, what's the trouble, sir?
I'll find out soon enough. Operator? St. John Carter here, Mercury Theatre. Send an ambulance quickly. There's been an accident. One of our stagehands, he's lying unconscious in the alley. Hurry, please. Yes.
One of the cast, Mr. Carter? Who is it? Tell me.
It's Buckland. I can't bring him round. I tried.
Jeff Buckland? Oh, Miss Kenmore will be terribly distressed. Stage carpenter with her for 20 years.
I dare say she will.
Hadn't we better go and lift him in, sir? Perhaps there's something could be done.
No, it's better not to move him till the doctor comes. It may be serious. We wouldn't want to injure him, you know.
A man found dead or dying. A phone call. Then the waiting. Over the crumpled figure stood old Tom Snellen, doorkeeper, and St. John Carter, leading man. Waiting. Waiting until an ambulance drew up and an intern came to kneel beside Jeff Buckland.
Which one of you called us?
I did.
You said the man was unconscious.
Well, he looked to me. I'm no physician.
This man's dead. Shot through the heart. You'd have done much better to have called the police.
The police arrived, and actors coming into the evening performance were questioned. The star of the play in the theater early, as was her custom, was left undisturbed. The constable at the door admitted a young plainclothes man.
Inspector Mitchell?
Yes, Jordan?
One of the men found this, sir. Hidden under some rubbish in the alley. .32 caliber.
Thank you. Mr. Ellis.
Attention now focused on David Ellis, stage manager in Miss Kenmore's troupe.
Ever seen this pistol, Mr. Ellis?
Why, yes, it's the one we use in the play. I keep it in my desk.
Rather useful license for it.
What sort of ammunition do you have?
Oh, blank cartridges, of course. 32 blanks.
It's not loaded with blanks now. Bullets. And one chamber has been fired. I must warn you, Ellis. Anything you say henceforth will be written down and may be used as evidence.
Well, you mean you're arresting Dave? But you can't. He never hurt anyone.
Who are you, young lady?
Miss Kenmore's secretary.
My wife, Inspector. Please, Lucy.
But this is... Oh, Inspector, you don't understand. Jeff was our friend. He's been... Well, like a father to both of us. And while you stand here wasting time, the real murderer is getting farther away.
That will do, Lucy. I take it there's been some trouble. Please, sir, state your business and then leave. I can't have my theatre disrupted 15 minutes before curtain time.
Oh, Miss Kenmore.
Now, Lucy, control yourself. Will someone be good enough to tell me what has happened?
Certainly, Miss Kenmore. I had hoped it wouldn't be necessary to disturb you just at present. But one of your stagehands, Mr. Buckland, was found this evening outside...
Octavia Kenmore, distinguished actress-manager, darling of the provinces, equally adept at comedy or tragedy.
Of course, I'm gravely shocked. Poor Mr. Buckland, a good and faithful servant, Inspector. Oh, but it is preposterous of you to suspect Mr. Ellis. My stage managers never kill people. In any case, I can't spare him. We ring up in 10 minutes exactly.
I'm extremely sorry, Miss Kenmore, but Ellis is a material witness. He must come to the station house for further questioning. It was his pistol.
It was my pistol. I own all the props used in my place.
The license is in his name. Legally, he is the owner.
Then I demand that you release him in my personal recognizance.
I'd like to do that, ma'am, but unfortunately, your entire company is under surveillance and is only permitted to perform tonight. Ellis, you must come with me.
Very well. Go with them, David. Lucy and I will be down to see you, and the inspector, as soon as we possibly can.
Thank you, Miss Kenmore.
The police left the theater, except for certain constables on duty at the door. And in her dressing room, Octavia Kenmore made ready.
Lucy, my child. Ah, me. How weak a thing the heart of woman is. Come. Don't be downcast.
Oh, how can I help it, Miss Kenmore? With David in prison.
Nonsense. He's only detained for questioning. He isn't charged with any crime. I'm thinking of Jeffrey Buckland, an excellent good man, and the best stage carpenter there was in England.
Was he married?
His family's in Manchester. I'll have to telephone them immediately after the performance.
What? You really mean you're going on?
Certainly I am. And you will do David's job tonight.
What? Me? Run the show?
Why not? You've seen David do it often enough. And work is what you need. There's no time to think. Now, quickly now. Check the stage for the first scene and while I repair my makeup. Go, my child.
The play went smoothly. The curtain rose and fell as the actors took their calls. Lucy Ellis, listening to the applause, realized suddenly she was quite calm and self-possessed. But her composure was nothing to that of Octavia Kenmore. She descended on the police station not many minutes later.
Ah, Miss Kenmore and Mrs. Ellis. Come in, won't you?
I am, Inspector. Now, I expect a full explanation of what you have accomplished by imprisoning my employee these past 2 hours.
Please sit down, ladies. There's plenty of time.
Is there? I expect to leave Brighton tomorrow night, taking my stage manager with me.
Is he all right, Inspector?
He's not in chains or even in a dungeon, Mrs. Ellis. In fact, he's quite comfortable.
Oh, thank heavens for that.
If you will both be seated, madam.
Since you insist. Thank you, Inspector. Well, have you nothing to tell us about this case?
I'm waiting at the moment for our pathologist's report.
Of course. The autopsy, is it not?
Yes, routine police procedure.
Well, the man's been shot. That was quite obvious.
The bullet is important, particularly in court, to establish the actual weapon.
Seemed to me the hand that fired the weapon is a more important consideration.
Eventually, Miss Kenmore, and inevitably, I trust. We'd like to know more about Buckland's background, his habits. Did he drink, for example?
Despite the general opinion, there are many in the theatrical profession who are not addicted to alcohol, Inspector. Mr. Buckland was a decent man.
Octavia Kenmore told the truth about the murdered man, a non-drinker, except for an occasional pint of bitter after the show. A devoted family man in an occupation where family relationships are often difficult to maintain. There was nothing to indicate a motive for murder.
In all the years with me, I have never known him to miss a single performance. He was a craftsman who could rig and handle any production, heavy or light. With him on the job, my stage managers had an easy time of it. Everyone liked him. His only fault, perhaps, was that he was too loyal to me.
We're not being much help to you, are we, Inspector?
Oh, yes. You've helped to fill in the picture. I've learned a lot.
Well, what have you learned?
Two important things, Miss Kenmore. First, that Buckland was not a man who made enemies. All my reports bear this out. And also, that he was extremely devoted to you.
You think that's significant?
Extremely. You keep a close rein in your company. You should know of any jealousies or quarrels that occurred.
I'd know about them, yes.
I'm sure of that. You're not the person to tolerate friction or even bad habits in members of your troop. Come in.
Pathology report, Inspector. I knew you wanted right away.
Thank you, yes. Well, this is interesting. Why wasn't I told of this before?
You know what they're like in the lab, Inspector. They wanted to be sure. Absolutely sure.
I see. Miss Kenmore, can you think of a reason why anyone should want to shoot a dead man?
Oh, hardly. A useless procedure.
It seems so. Says it happened. Apparently Buckland was dead of strangulation before he was shot.
Today, the instrument of that murder, a piece of sash cord, can be found in the Black Museum. It is a good question. Inspector Mitchell repeated it.
Can you think of a reason why anyone should want to shoot a dead man?
An interesting problem, is it not?
The medical report is very definite. Buckland was strangled with a thin piece of rope. Because he wore a scarf about his neck, the marks weren't noticed till they brought him to the lab. He was dead before the bullet ever was fired.
Inspector Mitchell then went back to the scene of the crime, the alley beside the theater where the body of Jeffrey Buckland had been found. And with him, at her own insistence, went Octavia Kenmore.
What are they looking for, Miss Kenmore?
The thin piece of rope, of course. They'll never find it. If the murderer had an ounce of brains, he'll have taken it with him.
Oh, it's strange. I don't suppose this alley ever had so much light turned onto it before.
It was strange. Men searching every cranny, their flashlights pointing and probing, picking out grillwork balconies, iron ladders and fire escapes thick with rust. The men themselves silhouetted against the light.
Oh, Miss Kenmore?
Yes?
We found this, caught up in that balustrade. I think it's the weapon. Our lab can tell us definitely, of course.
I see. A piece of lash line.
What's that? Lash line, did you say?
Yes, it's the sort of rope we use backstage to lash the scenery together.
Much the same as ordinary clothesline?
Or sash cord, yes.
Would you be able to identify it as belonging to your stage equipment?
Oh, that's hard to say.
Miss Kenmore, Inspector.
Yes, Lucy?
One of the stagehands reported to me tonight. They'd had trouble with one of the sets. The line was too short to make it fast.
Could you locate that piece of scenery, Mrs. Ellis?
I think so. I told him to leave it on top of the stack so that we could replace it in the morning.
Well, let's go on stage then, shall we? Do you know, Miss Kenmore, as a youth, I was strongly attracted to the theater.
Were you indeed, Inspector Mitchell?
They moved through the stage door onto the platform.
This is the flat, the one with the short lash line.
You see how it works, Inspector. The rope is flipped round the iron cleats and tied off at the bottom, so the audience sees only an unbroken wall.
I understand perfectly. The core of this rope matches the piece found in the alley, rust, stains, and all.
What does that suggest to you, Inspector?
There's little doubt in my mind, Miss Kenmore, that the person we want is a member of your own company.
Yes, I've decided that for myself some time
ago. A member of your company, I think, cut off this cordage to strangle Buckland, and someone else, familiar with these premises, took the pistol from Ellis's desk.
Then you don't think my husband's guilty?
I haven't said that. But I must check once more who actually was here, backstage, between the hours of 6 and 7.
I was here myself in my dressing room. And Sneller, the doorkeeper, was on duty. He surely...
We took his statement, of course. He seemed a bit evasive, now that I think of it.
I won't hear a word against him. Sneller's perfectly honest. I take an oath on it.
Is he? A remarkably sound sleeper, all the same?
What do you mean?
The extraordinary thing about his story, he claims to have been dozing in his chair. He didn't wake even when a pistol was fired, not 30 feet away. I think perhaps I'd better go and visit him.
Then I'll come.
No, Miss Kenmore, not this trip. Investigations of this kind are sometimes dangerous.
The old man lived close by the theater. Four flights of well-worn steps led to an attic door.
What do you want? What is it?
You're Mr. Snellen?
I am.
We're the police. My name is Mitchell, C.I.D. Should I show you my credentials?
No, I recognize you, sir. Come inside.
John Snellen had no need to be afraid, but it was his nature to be timid. Merely an old man who wanted to avoid trouble. Sometimes when arguments occurred, it was his habit to pretend to be asleep in his cubbyhole behind the stage door.
You expect me to believe that when a pistol was fired close by you, you didn't even hear it?
I can't rightly say this. There's heavy traffic in the street that time of night, you know. If I did hear a noise, I must have took it for a passing car.
Yes, I'll admit that's a likely explanation.
Perhaps I ought to.
Yes, what is it? If there's something you haven't told us, I advise you to come out with it.
What had he seen and heard? A trifle. But possibly a trifle of importance. Almost enough to send a man to the gallows.
I know I should have spoke of it before, sir, but... Well, it was a little before 7 o'clock, and Mr. Buckland was inside near his toolbox, talking to this flashy-dressed young fella. And Mr. St. John Carter, he was there too, just standing by, so to speak.
Could you hear what they were saying?
No bookmaking in this house. That was what Buckland said. Miss Kenmore won't stand for it.
She's strict about such things.
Yes, sir. Everyone knows that. Miss Kenmore won't have gambling in her company. An actor would get himself discharged if she caught him betting the horses or some such thing.
What else did Buckland say?
Well, he warned the fellow he'd go straight to Miss Kenmore. He said how this man had been following the company all along the tour, and Carter and some of the others had been betting with him. But that was all. Three of them went out together, still talking.
And that was the last you saw of him alive?
Yes, sir, it was. And Mr. Carter, sir, it struck me at the time. He came back a little later. Went up to his dressing room, I guess, and then went right out again. But he seemed so cheerful and high-spirited. I thought the gentleman must have settled their differences all right.
Carter didn't come back again till he found Buckland's body and called the ambulance.
That's right, sir.
It begins to make sense, Inspector.
Begins to, yes. But why the stage manager's gun? And why shoot a dead man? Why?
Why indeed? Why steal a gun to shoot a dead man? Hoping to find the answer to this question, the inspector went to Brighton Jail to call on David Ellis.
Look here, Inspector, why are you holding me without a shred of evidence? Won't I be permitted to travel with the company when they leave tonight?
It all depends.
On what?
Your replies to a few questions.
Ask them by all means.
How much gambling goes on in the company?
Not a great deal. Some of the actors bet a few shillings now and then. Actually, their salaries are so small they can't afford to be reckless.
Does Miss Kenmore know about it?
Not a chance. If she did, we'd have replacements in a matter of minutes.
It would follow then that an actor who wanted to keep his job would be careful that such information never reached Miss Kenmore.
Well, I'd certainly say so.
Is there anyone in the company who needed that job badly?
What do you mean, badly enough to commit murder?
Yes.
I doubt it. Of course, you never know. In troops like this one, most of the supporting cast are either on the way up or down. A dismissal might mean the end of the career.
Ellis, has anyone a reason for wanting you out of the way?
No. Why? Whatever for?
That gun was stolen from your desk, loaded with live ammunition, and after the murder, it was left where we'd be sure to find it and hold you responsible.
Oh, I can't believe that anyone would do a thing like that. Unless...
Unless?
No, Inspector, there really isn't anyone.
Indeed? Well, there is, though. No matter how clumsily he may have gone about it, I can't help feeling that our murderer has tried to pin his crime on you. For the moment, I'm going to let him think he's succeeded.
How do you do that?
By keeping you locked safely up here in jail.
A short time later, Inspector Mitchell was admitted to Miss Kenmore's suite at the Shorefront Hotel.
Any progress to report, Inspector?
Not much, I'm afraid.
Have you been to see David?
I have. I left him in the best of health.
Well, why are you holding him? David didn't kill anyone. You know that as well as I do.
I'm afraid I don't know it. I've met many murderers in my time, Mrs. Ellis. Most of them look quite as innocent as your husband. Besides, I have a hunch he could be somewhat more cooperative.
In what way?
Tell me, is there anything you know of that your husband might be concealing? Or some, well, mistaken idea of gallantry? Something perhaps concerning you?
I I hardly think so.
I seem to remember a melodramatic little scene I accidentally walked in on.
Hope that was nothing. Just because St. John Carter made some advances to me and David resented it.
Oh. That may be more important than you think, Mrs. Ellis. In fact, it may be the piece of information I...
Inspector Mitchell thought that he knew the killer at last. But it takes evidence to bring a man to court. Then Miss Kenmore made a helpful suggestion.
You said you were a devotee of the theater, Inspector Mitchell.
I am indeed, ma'am.
Did you by any chance see me as Lady Teazle?
I did. A most marvelous performance.
Then you recall, of course, the third act. I have something of that...
A crucial moment in a famous play, when, standing behind a screen, the lady overheard a villain's treachery exposed. Such a dramatic device as might be used effectively offstage as well as on. The theater before the matinee, the acting out began.
Oh, St. John, may I see you a minute?
Of course, Lucy, my dear. Not given up hope for Dave, I trust?
No, not at all.
That's the proper spirit. Still, I understand we're leaving Brighton without him.
Oh, please. I'd rather not discuss it.
Perhaps in his absence, you won't mind so much my paying you little attentions. Like the old days, eh?
St. John, Miss Kenmore's waiting. She wants to see you at once.
Really? The great Miss Kenmore? That sounds ominous.
It is. She's breathing fire and brimstone.
Is she? And it so happens I come from a long line of fire eaters. Lead the way, my girl.
Octavia Kenmore was seated at her makeup table. Behind her, the tiny dressing room was crowded with trunks and props and costumes. In an alcove, hardly noticed, there stood a screen.
Here he is, Miss Kenmore.
So I can see, yes.
Hello, what's the long face about? Nothing to do with me, I'm sure.
You've been placing bets on the races, Mr. Carter.
Oh?
Therefore, I'm compelled to dispense with your services. Here's your check and return fare to London. Your understudy will replace you at the matinee.
See here, you can't do this. I have a contract.
This check covers the terms of your contract.
Miss Kenmore, whoever told you this was lying.
A man in danger of his life seldom lies.
If Ellis made this accusation...
No, David. Your friend. Your flashily dressed friend who admits to bookmaking. And may shortly admit to murder.
Oh, so Morgan has squealed, has he?
If that's the word, yes. I gather he's ready to implicate you.
He'll try. That kind always does. He did the killing. He can't drag me into
this. I'm afraid you're already implicated quite seriously, Mr. Carter, and by your own words and actions.
Oh, well, Inspector Mitchell, isn't it? What sort of game is this?
The glorious game of play-acting.
Congratulations, Miss Kenmore. A very successful little playlet.
You haven't got anything you can prove.
No use bluffing. You took the pistol, didn't you? From Ellis's desk and shot Buckland with it.
I didn't kill him. He was dead before.
You are under arrest, Mr. Carter, and charged with willful murder.
It wasn't me, I tell you. Morgan choked him with that bit of rope when Buckland threatened him with the police. Morgan had no license and a previous record, too. It would have been jail for him. He did it, and after that...
Yes, you thought quickly. You tried to take advantage of the situation to frame Ellis so the field would be clear with his wife.
No!
No, Carter, you may not have killed anyone, but you are an accessory after the fact, and you did put a bullet through a man's heart. A delicate question for the jury to decide, but I predict you'll pay the penalty. Come along now, and come quietly.
Today, that piece of sash cord, properly marked and ticketed, lies in a glass case in the Black Museum. Theater can be, and most often are, fiercely loyal to one another. Octavia Kenmore was such a person, an actress manager who accepted responsibility not only for her company's professional welfare, but for their personal happiness as well. St. John Carter was an exception to the rule. But then his career had an exceptional ending, taking his final bow as he did on a platform 13 steps high at 8 o'clock one winter evening. Well, the murder weapon is on exhibit for all to admire in the famous room at Scotland Yard. And now, until we meet here again for another story from the Black Museum, I remain, as always, obediently yours.
The Black Museum, on Tuned to Yesterday, a syndicated recording from 1952. You're listening to An Hour of Crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Now time for an episode of the Screen Director's Playhouse, which brings us an adaptation of the film Criss Cross, which was released in 1949 and starred Burt Lancaster and Yvonne DiCarlo, along with Dan Duryea. We'll hear Lancaster reprise his role, along with capable radio actors Betty Lou Gerson and Jeff Corey, filling in those parts in an NBC broadcast from October 10th, 1949.
From Hollywood, the National Broadcasting Company presents... Screen Director's Playhouse, production, Criss Cross, director...
This is Robert Stewart-Mack.
Star...
This is Burt Lancaster.
The Hollywood Screen Directors bring you an experiment in crime. As for the first time on the air, we present the motion picture drama Criss Cross, starring Burt Lancaster in his original role of Steve Thompson.
This was it. There was no turning back now. I tensed behind the wheel of the armored truck. Pop Crane was riding in back with the Bliss Company payroll. $250,000. $250,000 in cash. This was the break that would fix it for Anna and me. Unless someone knew about our plans.
Steve!
Pop Crane stuck his head through the opening behind the driver's seat.
I don't like it, Steve.
What's the matter, Pop?
There should be three of us on a trip like this.
Take it easy, Pop.
We've always had three men on a run like this before.
But I told you, Bailey couldn't make it.
I guess you're right. I guess I'm just getting too old to be a guard on an armored truck.
Settle down, Pop. You got a long ride ahead of you. It's a 40-minute run to San Rafaelo. Nothing could possibly go wrong now. Unless Pop was getting wise. No. Nothing to do but sit here and keep an eye on the road. And think about Anna.
After it's done, it'll just be you and me, Steve. The way it should have been from the start. I'll make you forget all those things that happened to us before.
All those things that happened to us before. 2 years ago, I'd been going steady with Anna. Me, Steve Thompson. She wondered what I couldn't give her. Money, glamour, excitement. We broke up. I left town. When I came back, I got this job with the armored trucks. She was in my bones. Somehow, before I knew it, there I was. Back in the old place again. The Roundup. Our old hangout. And there she was, dancing with some guy out on the floor.
Better forget about Anna, Steve. She's bad medicine.
Well, my old pal, Pete Ramirez, minding my business again as usual, hmm?
Plenty of other girls besides Anna, Steve.
That official, Lieutenant? Well, now that you're a detective, Lieutenant, you just enjoy putting your nose in other people's lives.
Nick, Steve, not Lieutenant. Pete. I'm your friend, believe me. She's no good for you. Forget her.
Steve!
Here she comes. Why don't you tell it to her?
Steve! Oh, Steve, how are you?
Hello, Anna. Anna, Pete's got something he wanted to say to you. Haven't you, Pete?
Well, looks like you'd rather find it out for yourself. I'll see you later, Steve.
Get him. Oh, Steve, when'd you get back?
A couple of days ago. I don't know, week.
A week and you never called me up. Come on, sit down.
You're looking good, Anna.
Steve, why didn't you answer my letters?
Well, I guess I just never had anything to say.
Your family, your detective friend, Pete, they wouldn't tell me anything about you.
They figured we were all washed up.
Did you come in here to see me, Steve? Is that why you're here?
I suppose I figured I'd see you. Boy, we sure used to go round and round.
What do we ever have to fight about anyway? Steve, it was crazy. We were in love, weren't we?
Well, no use having a fight with anyone unless you really like him. Wouldn't be much fun, would it?
But then we'd make up, Steve. That was the best part, wasn't it? When we'd make up.
Yeah. We'd make up.
Excuse me. I hate to break this up, but you're sitting in my seat.
Slim.
Anna. You with him?
Steve, this is Slim Dundee.
Yeah, I've heard of him. Slim Dundee, the gangster.
I like Gambler better.
Slim, this is Steve Thompson.
Yeah, I know.
Anna, You running around with him?
What do you mean, running around, Steve? Anna and me are married.
Married? That's what Pete was getting at.
I was going to tell you, Steve.
Yeah, Steve, we're kind of celebrating tonight. Like to join us?
No. No, thanks. Anna and I just ran into each other, see?
Sure.
We just stopped to say hello, that's all.
I know how it is.
Well, so long, Anna.
Steve, wait.
What?
Oh, I'd like to explain.
Sure. We'll probably run into each other again. Sometime. Why shouldn't we? Mrs. Dundee. More to San Rafael. 30 minutes and then it would be all over. But it should have been all over then. It was finished. Anna and I were through. She had a right to get married, even to a guy like Sven. Only it wasn't finished. Everywhere I went, I'd see her face. Every girl I passed was her. But then one afternoon, a few months later, I really saw her. In Union Station. She was with Slim, hurrying towards the train gate. And then she was lost in the crowd. I was glad she hadn't seen me. Glad she was leaving town. But then, there she was again, coming back out of the passenger tunnel, alone.
The San Jose Super Chief is now loading at gate 4 for Chicago.
Hello, Steve.
Anna.
We'll depart on time.
But I just saw you leaving. You got on the train with Slim.
I just saw him off. You mind?
No. No, I don't mind. Why should I? It's none of my business.
Wait, Steve, I got to talk to you.
Go ahead.
No, I can't talk to you here.
Why not?
Vincent will see us together.
Vincent?
One of Slim's men. He's driving me home.
Oh. What's the matter? Afraid he'd get the wrong idea?
Right, he would.
Slim left Vincent around to keep an eye on you while he was out of town. Is that it?
If you want to put it that way. Don't turn. There he is. Don't let him see you.
He won't see me. You don't have to worry.
Steve, please, I got to talk to you. Come to my apartment later, please, Steve.
Aren't you afraid of what might happen?
Please.
Super Chief, now departing on track 4.
Quite a place you got here. Shannon and all. Slim's been pretty good to you.
Yeah.
And what do you want to see me for? He gives you everything?
Sure. Diamonds.
So that's what you saw in him.
Better than working for the department store.
I didn't think he was the marrying kind.
Oh, he did. He married me, all right.
Why did you do it?
You tell me why, Diamond.
Why did you do it?
You.
Me?
You and your family and your lovely copper friend, Pete.
Pete? Well, what did he do?
As if you didn't know. He said I was poison to you. Told me if I didn't stay away from you, he'd frame me and send me to jail.
Well, why did you come to me?
Because I was afraid. How's what chance did we have with the kind of money you were making? Because you left and I wrote you and you didn't answer. Because every day you were away, Slim was after me, wanting to give me everything. And I got tired of being a fool. I got fed up and I didn't care.
Anna.
Steve, what happened? How did it happen? How did I get all mixed up?
I didn't know it.
I'm scared. Slim and Vincent, the killers, the cutthroats. Steve, what are we going to do?
I don't know, Anna. But you're not going to go back to Slim. More and I'd have money enough to take a far away from Slim Dundee. But then it was different. While Slim was out of town, we couldn't stay away from each other. We took crazy chances in being seen together. And that morning, Anna came to my room.
Steve, you gotta hide. Do something quick today.
What happened?
Slim's on his way back. He's looking for you.
Well, how do you know?
He found out about us. He must have. Steve, we were crazy.
When's he coming back?
I don't know, any minute. You gotta hurry.
No, Anna. I'm not leaving you.
You've got to. He'll kill you. You don't know him the way I do. You don't know the people he's got around him. He'll kill you the minute he sees you, Steve.
We'll work it out. We'll go away together.
Where can we go? We got no money. Don't you understand? We haven't got a cent. He'll always find it.
Forget about Slim. Pull yourself together for a minute. Now listen to me. If it's money you want, I'll get it. I know a way.
But how? How?
Never mind. Go up to the house at Palos Verdes.
Your beach house at Palos Verdes? What for?
Stay there. Wait for me. I'll clear it up.
You can't,
Steve. Yes. Yes, I know a way. I've got to.
Steve. Slim.
Hello, baby.
Slim, listen, please, Slim.
You know, Steve, it don't look right. Anna being here in your room, can't exactly say it looks right now, can you? What do you think, Vincent?
No, Bush. It looks kind of like...
I asked her to come here, Slim. I wanted to reach you. I wanted to talk to you.
Oh. So it was me all the time, huh? So it's not the way it looks.
No. No, it's not the way it looks.
That's right, Slim. It's just like he said, he wanted to talk to you, and you were out of town, so I said I'd come over.
You see, Vincent, he really wanted to see me.
Yes, Slim. Maybe he thinks you're pretty.
Shut up. Tell me now, Stevie, what kind of business could you and I possibly have together?
A job.
A job? Well, why come to me?
Because you're the only crooks I know.
Oh, now is that polite, Steve? Is it hospitable?
Should I let him have it, Slim?
Hold it. Tell me, Stevie, what kind of a job is this you need crooks?
Where I work.
Where you work?
Armored trucks. I drive a payroll truck.
What are you talking about? You can't hijack an armored truck. It can't be done. You know it can't be done.
It can be done.
How?
If you have an inside man.
Come up to my place tomorrow, Steve. We'll discuss it. You know where my apartment is, don't you, Stevie?
I hunched over the wheel of the armored truck. Pop Crane was in back with the payroll. $250,000 in cash. But nothing would happen to Pop, they promised. Only 15 minutes more. It was all a matter of timing. Call it luck, fate, whatever you want. But if I hadn't come back to L.A., if I hadn't run into her again that night at the roundup, if I hadn't been at the Union Station that afternoon, Anna and I might never have gotten together again. But we did. And now we were trapped. I went to Slim's apartment to work out the deal.
Steve, this is Finchley.
Who's Finchley?
He's our layout man. It's all a matter of time, and on a job like this, Finchley can lay out a timetable that would have worked on the Normandy invasion.
I still think it's a lunatic idea. There hasn't been a successful heist of an armored truck in more than 28 years. What do you have in mind, Steve?
The Bliss Auto payroll.
That's Henry Fellow?
Yeah.
Very interesting. Yeah. Delightful, delightful. How long's the run?
40 minutes.
Let's see. You're on the coast highway at San Rafael. Only one highway available until you pass the bridge. No, this will take some doing. I suggest you go out for some sandwiches.
Anna's make some coffee out in the kitchen. I'll pick up some stuff to go with it.
You might as well relax, Steve. Yes, yeah, Steve, this will take quite a bit of doing so far as the mechanics.
Coffee ready, Anna?
Steve.
We've only got a second, Anna. They've gone out to pick up some sandwiches.
Steve.
Listen, Anna. Do you understand? You ought to go to the house at Palace Bridge.
I want to cry. I want to cry, Steve, when I think what's happening.
You wait at the house for me.
I wish we'd never met.
It's done. Settled. It's the only
way. I wish you'd never seen me.
You'll stay there. You'll wait for me. It'll take some time to get away. The police will hold me, ask me questions. But stay there. And don't worry.
Shh. Back.
Quick. Give me the coffee.
Yeah.
Let me take it in. You go out the back door.
Yes, I'm sure it'll work that way.
Well, just in time. Coffee's all ready.
Where's Anna?
Didn't you see her? She just went out for a paper.
No, I didn't see her.
Gentlemen, the plan's fairly complete now. No shooting, of course. We'll use a chemical explosive, man.
I told you we got the best.
In a getaway car?
Vincent drives the fastest heap there is.
No. I'd use the slowest vehicle to take the money out. Something nobody would suspect. Say, an ice cream wagon.
Smart, huh?
Smart. And you'll need a cover story.
What do you mean, cover story?
For the getaway. You'll need, an oil truck, too. One of those big ones.
Four.
To break down at the proper time, block the bridge.
Jam the truck sideways across the road, huh?
Yeah, cut off pursuit. Slim, after the robbery, you'll be driving up the coast. If they stop you, what's your story?
Taking a trip to Detroit, up the coast by way of San Francisco.
Good, good. But really go there. Advertise it. Let the cops downtown put it on the teletype.
We'll pass the word around. We'll give a farewell party the night before.
Well, there you have it. All clear?
How about it, Steve? Anything else you'd like to know?
Yeah. Who handles the payoff?
Who do you want? Finchley, Vincent, Walt, pick anyone. How about Anna?
Okay, let it be Anna. Is that all right for you?
I can handle Anna. Okay, Vincent, when you get that ice cream wagon back to town, give the money to Anna.
It's a deal. It's all set.
The way I see it, then, there'll be no shooting.
No shooting whatsoever, just like Finchley said.
No matter what, nothing's going to happen to the old man working with me. Is that understood?
You're the boss, Stevie. You get the truck there. We'll take care of the rest.
The plan was working for Anna and me. Slim threw his farewell party the night before. He even picked a fight with me. The cops couldn't possibly think we were in it together. And now, this was it. The payoff. For 35 minutes, I've been rolling that armored truck up the coast highway. Nothing could stop it now. 5 more minutes, and we'd be across the bridge. Another 5 minutes to San Rafael, to Vincent and the ice cream wagon, to the rest of them. Another 5 minutes to go. But then...
Steve, there's a car tailing us.
I looked into my rearview mirror.
Huh? Oh, it's just your imagination, Pop.
No. That big black sedan, he swung out as we passed.
Lots of black cars on the road.
Open her up. Let's see if they stay with us.
Oh, all right.
Faster, Steve. They're gaining on us.
It's all she'll do.
They were coming like a flying red horse.
They're going to pass us.
Well, they passed us. Guess they were just in a hurry.
Yeah. I must be getting jittery.
Take it easy, Pop. Only another 4 minutes. Another 4 minutes. Right on schedule. That would be Slim and Walt in that black sedan. And there's the oil truck right ahead. On the nose. Perfect timing. And right outside the gates of the Bliss Auto Plant, an ice cream wagon. Vincent.
Hey! Ice cream!
I turned into the main gate and I pulled up in front of the cashier's office. And there were Slim and Walt, walking towards us as we climbed out of the truck. And then it happened. An explosion. A yellow cloud of smoke rolling over everything, burning our eyes, choking us.
Go back, Steve! In the truck! It's a holdup!
Slim and Walt wearing gas masks now, coming through the smoke and the fumes. Pop down on one knee. Slim letting him have it.
Stop!
Then Slim turning his gun towards me, and I knew it was a double cross!
It's all right, nurse. Police department. Doctor said I could see him. I'm Lieutenant Pete Ramirez.
Oh, certainly, Lieutenant. Oh, that poor boy. But he's quite a hero. Did you see the evening paper?
Yes, yes.
Look, it says Steve Thompson fights off bandits single-handed. Bandits escape with
half the
payroll.
Yes, I know. Excuse me, please. I'd like to talk to him alone.
Oh. Hello, Lieutenant. Paying a friendly call?
Not so friendly, Steve. Pop Crane is dead.
Yeah, I know. I tried to save him.
No, you didn't, Steve. You were in with him. You were part of it.
You got it all figured out, huh?
They used you, Steve. They took you. Slim and Anna.
Oh?
You worked for the armored trucks. They needed an inside man. You were it.
Keep talking. You still haven't said anything.
What did she do, Steve? Make you promises? Were you going to run away together? Tell the truth, Steve. Didn't she work you for the prize sucker of all time?
Shut up. You don't know what you're talking about.
I'll tell you something that may interest you. Slim isn't dead. You didn't kill him. He got away.
What are you driving at?
Just this, chump. If she double-crossed you, if she's with Slim now, then you're all right. But if she's really waiting for you somewhere, then he'll get you.
Get out.
He'll send a gunman for you right here in the hospital. And
I said get out. Got nothing on me? I gotta sleep.
Sorry, Steve. But you'll never sleep again.
She's waiting for me.
Steve. Wake up, Steve.
I've got to sleep.
Wake up.
Vincent, what are you doing here?
Quiet. You want to wake up the whole hospital?
What do you want?
I come to get you, Steve.
I can't get out of bed. Can't you see I'm all strapped up? I can't move.
I got a wheelchair. You're coming with me.
Let go of me.
Slim wants to see you. Wants to find out where the money is, where Anna is. Come on.
Let me go. You can't take me out of here.
Now, come on. Let me get you in that wheelchair. I'll give it to you with the other end of this gun. There.
Look, Vincent, don't take me to Slim.
Keep your voice down. We're going into the hall.
What's he paying you? $2,000? $5,000? Take me where I want to go, and I'll give you $50,000. $50,000, Vincent. Are you listening?
Through this door. I got a car outside.
Come on, Vincent.
doesn't make who pays you. Son's a dead man. The cops are after him.
Put your arm on my shoulder while I hoist you into the car.
$50,000, Linson. That's a lot of dough. But I got it. You know I got it. Come on. Be smart. Take me where I want to go. Palos Verdes, down at the beach. $50,000, Vincent. $50,000. I knew you'd be here.
Where'd Benson come from?
Give him 50,000.
The Slim?
For me.
Pay him, Anna. Or give it to him. 5 bundles.
But so much.
Hand it over. You pay him and get rid of him.
Oh, here's your money.
Thanks. And don't try nothing funny if I close this door.
Steve, I don't get it. Why did Benson bring you? How'd you get out of the hospital?
Slim sent him.
Slim?
To get me. Oh. I offered him more money. He's got it now. He's satisfied. We're all through with him.
You think we're through? Don't you see? Don't you know what's going to happen? He's on his way back to Slim. You tell Slim where I am right this minute.
No. The cops are after him.
I got to get away. I got to hurry.
You mean leave me here?
How far could I get with you? You can't move. You wouldn't last a day. Why did you have to come here in the first place? Why? It was all working out fine. The papers said you'd be in the hospital for weeks.
I see. You came here because you didn't expect me to be here. Pete was right. It was you and Slim. All those things you said. You said you love me.
Love. Love, you gotta watch out for yourself. What do you want me to do? Give myself up, throw all this money away?
I never wanted the money. I just wanted you. After we split up, I used to walk around the streets at night. I used to think about you. I wanted to hold you. To take care of you. What a pity it didn't work out. What a pity. Run, Anna. Run.
I'm sorry. I can't help it. I'm sorry.
Oh. Sorry about what, Anna?
Oh, no. Oh.
Hello, Steve. I figured you'd bribe Vincent to take you to Anna. You always wanted her, didn't you, Steve? Well, now you've got her.
Steve, don't let him. Don't let him kill me, Steve. Take care of me. Help me, Steve.
What a pity, Anna. I can't move.
Slim, no!
It won't do you any good, Slim. You can't get away. You can't...
Drop it, Dundee. Drop that gun.
I'm sorry, Steve. I knew she was poison for you.
You tried, Pete. But some guys have to learn it. The hard way.
We will return in just a moment. In the following weeks, you will hear such stars as Joseph Cotten, Barbara Stanwyck, and Cary Grant. Next week, you'll find another adventure in radio drama on Screen Director's Playhouse. The motion picture story, Pitfall, with its original team of director and stars. Andre Dutoff and Dick Powell and Jane Wyatt. Now, here again is tonight's star, Burt Lancaster.
Thank you. In Crisscross, I was fortunate enough to work under a man I consider to be one of the world's finest directors. His name is Robert Siodmak, and he happens to be a very well-traveled fellow. Robert directed pictures in Germany and France before coming to Hollywood, where he said happily that his travels were finally over. Then he directed me in 2 pictures. Well, all I can say is that Robert Siodmak is now directing pictures in Italy. He's in Naples shooting a film called The Portent. But we've flown his recorded voice to Hollywood for the program tonight. My director, Robert Siodmak.
Thank you, Bert. I'm so sorry I'm not with you in Hollywood tonight. You see, I'm worried. In Crisscross, you were supposed to play the part of a rather tough young man. And really, you're such a nice fellow. Were you tough enough, Bert? If I were with you in the studio, I would nag at you and make faces, and then you would be aggravated and you'd act very tough. And everybody would say, you see, Siodmak is a good director, when really I'm just a good aggravator. So don't worry, Bert. Soon I will be back in Hollywood and I will drive you wild. Good night.
And good night to you, Robert Siodmak and Bert Lancaster. NBC's Tuesday lineup of top entertainment. You'll hear Cornell Wilde in This Little Plot of Ground, the story of a tragic marriage and one of America's most famous writers. Listen tomorrow night for Cavalcade of America, starring Cornell Wilde on NBC.
You're tuned for the stars on NBC.
The Screen Director's Playhouse, untuned to yesterday from October 10th, 1949 on NBC. And that brings to a close this hour of crime, untuned to yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Livonier. Thanks for listening.